The United Church women have decorated this sanctuary, and it is so beautiful. Wow. And the choir have selected a perfect anthem and sang it to perfection. And you at home might have your turkey or tofu roasting away. Maybe not tofu. I don't know. There's some tofu over there. Your pies are baked on the counter. But this morning's text that Gwen just offered us presents us with a challenge. 10 lepers, all of them healed. 9 of them, well, they just receive the healing and head off on their way. But one lone leper returns, prostrates himself at Jesus' feet, and gives thanks. On Thanksgiving Sunday, we have to ask ourselves the question, which group are we in? Are we with the 9 or are we with the 1? Probably a little bit of helpful background on leprosy, because we don't really have much of that around in our world today anymore. Leprosy was one of the most feared of diseases in Jesus' time. Leprosy would cause the person to be completely removed from society. Leprosy was horrible. It tore away, literally tore away at your body, causing mutilation. You were highly infectious. People did not want to come anywhere near you, and Jewish law required you to be a certain distance away from the main community. There was no cure waiting for the leper to receive. And as the leper would go into society, fear of contagion would precede him or her. You would be required to wear special clothing that would designate your disease so that people from far away could see that who you were. You would sometimes shake bells. People could hear you coming. Or some of the lepers would even shout, "Unclean! Unclean!" so that those clean people would know to stay away from you. Yet, lepers are real people. Just like you and me. Men, women, children. They're real people who were forced to live on the fringe of society and to eke out an existence to try and survive. Lepers were the ultimate social outcast of Jesus' day. Well, as I mentioned, lepers are pretty much non-existent in society today. It's almost entirely cured. It does exist a little bit. But it has mutated over 2,000 years. It's mutated, it just has new forms. Many people live as social outcasts today. Many people live in feeling rejected from society. Have you ever felt like a leper in your life? Have you ever felt rejected because of what was going on with your life? I know it's almost flu season now. People already, I've been noticing at the end of the service during the passing of the peace, you know, when we shake hands or we might hug a special friend that we know a little bit better. Been noticing some people when they have kind of the flu bugs kind of around them, they've been kind of holding their hands together and bowing because they don't want to pass their flu bugs on to others. But that'll pass. Eventually the flu bug lifts and they're able to embrace their friend, shake their hand, hug them again. What about those glass ceilings, some of those stained glass ceilings that exist in our world today that separate some from others? What about those places where we are not allowed to come to the table because of our gender? What about those ways that we are excluded from the table because of our race? What about those ways that we are excluded from the table because of our sexual orientation? What about those ways we are excluded from the table because we're a refugee? Because we're homeless? Because we're divorced? Because we're a single parent? Oh, today, leprosy is still alive and well in our world today. And Jesus offers that cure, that welcome to all of us. This story is a healing story. The story is all about Jesus healing, but it doesn't end there, does it? All 10 of the lepers are healed, but that one who returns, well, he's quite unique, isn't he? Story says he's a Samaritan. He's a foreigner. And well, Jews don't like Samaritans. Luke, if you read through Luke's gospel, if you were to study through the gospel, Luke's Jesus goes to great lengths to explain how Jesus really wants his community to include the outsider. When you hear that this person that goes back to welcome, to say thank you, when you hear that he's a Samaritan, what jumps in your mind? Parable of the Good Samaritan, right? That, of course, is uniquely in Luke. You might also think about the parable of the prodigal son, the lost son, the loving father welcoming that lost son home, so happy, throwing a party. That's what Luke's Jesus is all about. Drawing the circle wide, welcoming the lost home, making sure everyone is included at the table. I wonder why, though, when we think of this passage, why is it that they're all healed, right? Why is it that 9 of them that receive the healing just kind of receive it and move on? What compels this one Samaritan leper to come back to Jesus and give thanks? What makes the difference from him to the others? You know what I wonder? I wonder if it's perspective. I wonder if this Samaritan leper is so far removed from the inner circle that it is just natural for him to go back to Jesus and say thank you. I know myself, when I work on the Downtown East Side and feed the homeless, we at First United Church there, we serve lunches and dinners, of course, and when people come and receive their meals, beautiful thing when you first experience it. They have this wonderful way of saying, thank you, sir. Thank you so much. The appreciation is overwhelming when you first experience it. And when you go around towards the end of the meal and clear the plates away from the tables in the dining hall, they'll say, thank you so much. That was a great meal. And then I think about myself and I think, you know, when I pop over to Tim Hortons next door, and I receive my lunch, do I have that kind of appreciation to the person at the counter? When I have my plate or bowl taken from my table, do I have that kind of appreciation to the person serving me? Sadly, no, I don't. Oh, sure, we love to receive Jesus' grace. We love receiving Jesus' forgiveness. We are so embraced by Christ's love and healing. But the question comes for us on Thanksgiving Sunday, what is our knee-jerk response to these essences of grace and love and peace that we get from God? Do we return to God in thanksgiving, in gratitude? Is that what we do, or do we just receive and move on? I guess that's probably a good segue for us to move on to our theme focus of gratitude this morning. We've been walking several weeks, walking boldly into the future, and this morning we've been walking boldly into the future with gratitude. And considering what that means, I would suggest to you and to me as a church that this will be one of the key questions churches will be asking as we move into the future. What category do we fall into? Will we be a community of faith that is among the 9? Because we all receive God's love. Or will we be like that unique one that receives and is a community of gratitude and thanksgiving? I think that's the kind of question that congregations need to be asking Do we focus our ministry around the needs of the inner circle of the community that is already here, or are we also focusing on the needs of the larger community, in our case, in the Fleetwood, Surrey area? It's interesting the things that stick with you over time, right? I was thinking back my final year in seminary. And every year when you're a theological student, you do a field placement. You're placed in a congregation or a ministry setting, and you do ministry, hands-on stuff, right? And my last year, my professor, she said, you know, you've completed everything. You can do anything you want. Can't sleep in on Sunday morning, but you gotta do something. So I thought, I want to go, and I want to experience different congregational cultures from the perspective of the newcomer. So every week, I went to a different United Church, and I got to experience what it would be like to go in as a fresh, new face. What was it like for the newcomer to go in to these different churches? The reports were not great. It was not an experience of being welcomed and loved. Quite often, I would go into a church and was barely even welcomed. Quite often I'd go into a church and it seemed like they could care less whether I was there or not. I would make my way into the sanctuary and have a seat, and rarely was I smiled at, and I certainly was very rare to receive a good morning. Frankly, it was one of those Samaritan city kind of experiences where it seemed like I was going to their place and I really didn't care very much whether I came back again. Made me think about the practice that some really wise group leaders use when they're doing circle facilitation. And you've probably been in these kind of situations. You're in a circle with other people, you're doing Bible study, you're doing a group discussion topic, and the group leader always leaves one chair empty. Have you noticed how she does that or he does that? And they often will talk about it, say, this, we're going to save this seat. We're going to think about those voices that aren't represented here around the circle. We're going to hope that this seat will be filled over time for the people that aren't yet here. We're going to be a place of welcome for that presence, for that voice that isn't being heard from at this point in time. I think Dietrich Bonhoeffer, in his book, The Cost of Discipleship, spoke it the best. Dietrich Bonhoeffer is a fascinating read if you ever want to read him. He's a Lutheran theologian imprisoned by the Nazis and wrote much of his writing behind bars in a death camp. And Bonhoeffer says, the church is the church only when it exists for others. Not dominating, but helping and serving. Church is the church. It must tell people of every calling what it means to live for Christ and exist for others. I think these days it's challenging to be the church. And we're all asking those questions. Why are some congregations healthy and thriving, and why are some congregations toxic and dying? My suggestion to you as we consider this topic is that one of those parts of the conversation is that presence of an attitude of gratitude. That presence of an attitude of thanksgiving needs to be part of our congregations today in order for them to thrive and be healthy. It's so apparent, isn't it, when you're around a person of faith, when you're around a person of faith and they have that depth of faith and thanksgiving, you want to be around them more, don't you? And when you go into a community of faith and they are so rich and deep in their spirituality, and you can see the kind of thanksgiving and gratitude they have for who they are and what they get to do, that you want to be part of that community. Karl Barth, one of the most noted theologians, in my opinion, of the last century, he says the most basic response to God, gratitude. Not fear and trembling, not guilt or dread. Bart says living into a real life of gratitude is to live a life of faith. To have faith is to live faith, and to live faith is to give thanks. So how do we go about this? And this is a good theory. It's a good concept. It makes sense on paper, right? I mean, we all want to be the one leper that returns and gives thanks. The choir was saying, how come you get to be the leper that goes back and gives thanks to Sage? Well, because I wrote it, that's why. But how do we do this kind of stuff? That's not easy. This is hard, hard stuff. I would suggest to you there's a spiritual practice that is so rich and deep and meaningful. In the 16th century, there's a Christian mystic named St. Ignatius of Loyola. And she gave the world the spiritual practice of what's called the examen, E-X-A-M-E-N. And long before Oprah Winfrey made all her money on the gratitude journal, St. Ignatius gave the world the examen, which is what she got it out of. The examen is a prayerful review of one's day. So as the sun is setting and coming to an end, and as the evening is being put aside and the things are done, what Ignatius says is that we must review our day in order to increase our spiritual consciousness, our depth, our faith, and our gratitude. She invites us into asking questions, to journaling questions, to praying with questions like, what are you grateful for today? Where did Jesus show up today? Where did you walk in the darkness today? And as your head hits the pillow each night and you do these kind of spiritual exercises, we increasingly deepen in our faith and in our awareness, and increasingly we grow as people of thanksgiving. I'd warn you, that's a dangerous exercise, because it will change who you are as a person of faith. Well, I know this evening we're excited about Thanksgiving dinners tonight and tomorrow night, perhaps. I just want to share, as we come to an end, a Thanksgiving memory I have, Thanksgiving dinner. Two very good friends of mine, my very first wedding that I ever did. I got my license early so I could do their wedding. They're two lawyers, and we were studying. They did the law route, and I did the theology route, so we went our way. Sounds like a joke almost. Two lawyers and a minister walking. Anyway. They're transplants from Alberta. Murray and Corrine had moved here. And they said, you know, we want to have Thanksgiving dinner as a family. But we don't have any family here. They're all in Calgary. So they decided that they would create their own family Thanksgiving dinner. And they decided they would invite business colleagues, friends, all these people they knew in their life to come to their home and make family Thanksgiving dinner. So we got together and we're having a little bit of wine and chit-chatting away about things in life. And then Corrine calls us to the dinner table. It looked beautiful. And the smells were wafting up into our nose and the colors were there. And we sat down. Corrine's at the head of the table. She's holding this, carving knife and fork. She's got the turkey right in front of her. And she said, in my family, what we do is we say what we're thankful for, and then we do that all around the Thanksgiving table. So I'll go first, and you can all take turns going around the Thanksgiving dinner table, giving a few things that you're thankful for in your life. The silence was palpable. These folks did not attend church. These folks were business people, lawyers, doctors, were self-made men and women, right? What do we give thanks for? We make our lives our destiny. But Corrine is a trial lawyer, and she's got a knife in her hand, so we kind of did what she said. And we went around the table, and we gave this beautiful Thanksgiving grace. It was wonderfully awkward. But then I thought, you know, all we need to do is cover off the next 364 days of the year, and we've got this thing figured out. Thanksgiving is not an easy response in our faith. We are so blessed in our lives. But the call for us in this story is to be people of thanksgiving, to be so aware of how blessed we are, even amidst our troubles and our struggles. Question for us, even in our blessed first world, middle class, privileged place we live, question is, do we want to be with those nine or with the one? This is a faith question for us, and the response is ours. Amen. Oh, and I have one quick thing as Gina offers us some music for meditation.